This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, 91-year-old Paul Ferdinandson of San Jose, California, originally from the Fresno area, but at Christmas time in 1944, he was a long way from Raisin Country. He was fighting and freezing in the Battle of the Bulge. We'll get to that story of why one of his friends said Paul saved his life, but let's get the whole picture of your experience as the 84th Infantry Division recaptured Verdun.
The rest of our company was supposed to have taken the town within minutes after we went through and dug in. We'd done our job.
Right.
Now you're supposed to come in and take the town. Well, they never showed up. And I thought, uh-oh, this is Thanksgiving all over again. I sent two guys back to find out what the screw-up was. Well, they never came back. So I asked another fellow.
Waldron Dyer?
Waldron Dyer. Said if he'd go up for a little excitement, him and I were going to try to get through town. We got up, German soldier shot point blank at us, could have been more than a few feet away, and we had left our packs and all that stuff behind belts and shot at him, and then we ducked between these two houses, got up to the street, and the Germans knew we were there somewhere, thought maybe we'd gone into the house and were yelling at us to surrender. So we got to the edge of the town, and he asked me, I don't have any bullets left in my rifle. So we decided, well, we better get back. So we sneaked back to the edge of the house and then sprinted to where we had dug our foxhole. I said, well, this is all screwed up, and I'm going to go back by myself this time. And I stuck the same way, just said to myself, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, go, because it's scary, you know, because I don't know, the German might be guns pointed at me. But I didn't go. So I did it the second time. I sprinted, probably broke a couple of records of getting across the street to a church yard, and got back, and our company was on the edge of the other edge of town. I asked, well, what happened? He said, well, the captain said we had too many casualties from our own, which we had walked partially through too.
Artillery?
Our mortars, basically what it was. So we didn't think we had enough men, and I thought to myself, bolt. they had enough guys. They just chose not to go any further. So I went, found out what was going on, went back, and then now we get to Altman. The word comes that we got to get Hank Altman out of here because he's in bad shape. Our aid man, Gibson, we call him Doc, he dug a shallow trench and laid Altman in it, but then he came to me the next evening. It happened on Christmas Day night that Hank was getting worse and worse. We had to get him evacuated somehow. So I picked two guys that carry rifles, and another guy and I would carry Hank Altman. And so I'd been through the town once before. We got to the same spot and sent the two riflemen sprinting across to that spot that I'd pointed out, told them that they got shot at or shot, that we weren't coming. We would just not try to bother, because carrying somebody is pretty slow.
Yeah.
But they got across, and then carrying Altman, he had his arms around our neck, and we dragged and moved as fast as we could across that street. And
did anyone fire at you guys while you were dragging them across?
No.
Got them there?
Yeah, no. And the Germans just stayed bottled up, the four of us, and we came back to the platoon. And during that time, there was a two-story house behind the 4th platoon. They could look down into our foxholes a little bit, and they shot through the head two or three guys, and of course we got word in a hurry, do something. So I had guys punch their rifles between some hedges and then shoot into that upstairs, and intermittently just fire in there. Mm-hmm. And they never shot again then.
And you're painting a picture for us of how chaotic and insane this becomes, and I'm trying to imagine being you. And it's from one thing to the next. It's, well, these guys are taking pot shots at us from up there. We got to take care of that. You're evacuating a wounded buddy and saving his life and getting back to Hank. So you guys get him where he needed to go, and they evacuate him further from there to a field hospital. But at that point, you probably have no idea whether he's going to make it or not, huh?
Mm-mm.
When did you find out?
It had to have been after the war was over. Maybe he got my address and sent a Christmas card or something. But anyway, we made contact, and we kept in close contact. And he passed away a couple of years ago with cancer.
But you got to see him again after the war at a reunion.
Quite a few times, yeah.
What did he tell you?
I saved his life.
How'd that make you feel?
Well, I felt kind of embarrassed by it. I said, I didn't think your life was saved just by getting back to a good field hospital somewhere.
You had a hand in that, and you risked your life to do it.
Yeah, I did that. But.
And the bulge wasn't over on December 26th. You guys had a few more weeks, and the weather wasn't getting any better. How bad were those conditions? What was the worst that you dealt with? And how frustrated were you with the rubber shoe selection?
Yeah, well, that's nothing I could do about it. So my feet were soaking wet.
You're a size 11.
Yeah.
But the biggest
24 hours a day.
The biggest rubber shoes they had to go over your boots were size 10.
Size 10.
So you were on your own.
Yeah. So all I had was leather shoes, you know. They got soaking wet, and that's why my feet froze and turned black.
Where'd you guys sleep?
Out in the open in the woods.
In the snow?
In the snow, yeah.
Digging a foxhole in frozen, icy ground.
Sometimes we'd say the hell with it. We wouldn't even bother digging a foxhole. We'd just get behind a tree. And during that time, I had a kind of a raincoat where I kicked snow away, then laid down the raincoat and then take my soaking wet shoes and socks. I had another pair of socks that I could change. And we wore overcoats. We had to have something or we'd be freeze to death standing up. And then lay down on that, and just sheer exhaustion, you'd fall sound asleep for a short while, and then you have to get up and stomp your feet again. And I would sleep with my soaking wet shoes on my belly as I'd kind of curl around the shoes and kind of get them to dry out a little bit.
So day after day of combat during the day and fighting the elements overnight.
Overnight. We were supposed to have scouts out because the Germans might attack us during the night. That's when I took it upon myself to ignore that. I said, then I don't be going out here in this crap. I put a scout out maybe 2 trees away from us, just maybe not more than 20 feet. Okay, you're the scout now in case anybody says this is where you were put on duty.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody ever checked. Like I said, I led all the attacks. And we basically, just huge skirmish lines, just moved east. The Germans would stop in small villages or certain spots where were easier to defend and take us on for a short while, and then they would take off because we'd bring in mortars and stuff. And the bulge lasted close to a month.
And what a heavy price was paid, and certainly all those who didn't come home, and that number was astronomical, but... You did come home, and you came home with physical and mental and emotional scars. You told us about the nightmares that you've had for 70 years since then.
Yeah.
How bad did your feet get? Can you give us a sense of what that was like then and what you've had to live with since?
Well, I was in the field hospital right at the end of the bulge, and I could have played that game, and I would never have had to go back.
Because your feet were black. They were frozen, frostbitten, no feeling.
No, they hurt.
You could feel the pain.
Very painful. Kind of a little sideline there. The general of our division came by that little field hospital, and he stopped and asked me, how you feeling, son? And I said, I'm doing just fine, sir. And tears, I mean, I got tears in my eye. He got tears in his eyes and said, I don't know how you boys can stand it. I was there, I think, 3 days. Then I got survivor's guilt. I felt real guilty. And I'm back here on my butt on a canvas stretcher, and they're out there in those dang snow, and still fighting against the Germans. So I asked, how about letting me go and going back? If you want to go, go ahead. So I went right back, finished out the war.
I keep harping on your feet, and you would get the Purple Heart because of what happened to your feet throughout those brutal conditions of the bulge. What about in all the years since? Do they bother you? Do you have lingering effects of that?
Yes, I really believe that my feet have given me a little problem ever since. I mean, they all ache, and especially my big toe. It bothered some, but not to the point where I feel I'm crippled.
I know I'm jumping way ahead here, but I'm thinking about your coaching career, and I've interviewed some other guys over the years who fought in World War II and went on to be highly successful coaches. And you finished up at Fresno State after the war. We're throwing javelin for Coach Hanner there on the Bulldog track team. And did some coaching up and down the San Joaquin Valley, and now here in the Silicon Valley, the first coach at Cupertino High School. And I mean, just hundreds of guys who played for you over the years. There's a lot of players who think they have it rough, think you're tough on them. They have things to complain about.
Yeah.
Did you ever use any of your war stories to put that in perspective for them and say they don't know anything?
No, I really didn't. I know I would speak about the experiences in class. I taught health education in Escalon.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, just to break the routine, I'd go into a war story. And once they'd heard them once or twice, another war story. They'd heard enough.
Well, I know the people that listen to this program can't get enough, and they're probably in awe, as I am, of some of the situations that you endured. And now that you've had the lens of history to look back, to see the bigger picture of everything that was happening in Europe, the magnitude of the Battle of the Bulge, its significance, and the bigger war, knowing how many Americans died, you think about all those close calls you had. How fortunate do you feel that you survived it all?
I'm pretty lucky because I believe Americans lost 15,000 dead in the Bulge. I think that was the figure.
I mean, here you are. You're 91. You still look like you're in really good shape. You obviously speak very well. People can hear how sharp you are. All these years after these incredible experiences in the war, why you? Why do you think it was that you made it through all those moments?
Lucky. Maybe inheritance. I don't know.
Well, I know that your three sons and five grandkids are pretty glad that you made it home, survived the war, and got a chance to meet your wife and have this life.
Yeah, they wouldn't be around if I weren't around.
Amen. Amen. I know we've covered a lot of ground here, and I'm sure there are a lot of other things that we didn't touch on, but I want to make sure that I say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for risking your life in the way you described, and thank you for telling us about it. I know there's one other thing I have to ask you about, because you've got a great picture here. You asked me if I recognized the guy who was pinning a medal on your chest, and the beret gave him away. It's General Montgomery, one of the great famous generals of World War II.
He was the Eisenhower of Britain.
Yes, he was.
He commanded all the forces.
So how was it that he came to pin a medal on you? What'd you do, and where was that? Tell me about it.
Well, I'm not sure exactly. They don't tell you this is why you're getting this. I can think of two or three things, like Thanksgiving and Christmas, and there were some other things that our platoon led. And we were attached to the British Second Army in the Siegfried Line, and in the Bulge, I believe we were also still attached in a way to the British Second Army, as well as American Ninth Army.
So is that picture, was that once the fighting had stopped, or that was while things were still going on?
Still going on.
When he gave you that medal, did he say anything to you?
He asked where I was from. I said, California. He said, that's way out west, isn't it? The general from the United States.
Omar Bradley was there,
Omar
too.
Omar Bradley. He stepped back so that they could take the picture without him in it. I wished he had been in it. It meant more to me.
Well, it's a great photograph.
It is a great photograph. It's a good memory thing.
Speaking of memories, when you think back on it all, what are you most proud of? What are you most thankful for?
Well, that I came through not being physically crippled or mentally deranged. I had trouble with, four-letter?
PTSD.
PTSD. That was a difficult time, but I fought my way through it. You know, when the war ended in Europe, the word PTSD wasn't even in use yet.
No.
You were just battle weary, or you're battle fatigue, or something like that. And a few days away from it, you'll be okay.
Just get over it.
Yeah. That's about it.
Easier said than done.
That's right. It didn't work out that way.
Have you found anything that helps with it for you?
Time. Time took care of it.
Has it helped at all? Has it been therapeutic for you to write down some of your experiences?
That's a good point. The reason I did this writing was for family.
Mm-hmm.
I figured, someday I'm not going to be here anymore. What I went through and all that stuff, there was some unbelievable experiences. You'll never know anything about it. So I thought, it's a kind of a history thing for the family.
Well done, sir.
Yeah, I'm glad I did it.
Well, so am I, and I'm glad you spent this time sharing with us. And I'm sure there are some veterans listening today who went through some similar things, and maybe your story can be an encouragement to them. As we wrap up, I do have something to add to Mr. Ferdinandsen's memoirs. I was hoping I might dig up a few more details on that medal that General Montgomery pinned on him. Turns out it is England's Distinguished Conduct Medal, one of the highest given by the UK. And you heard Mr. Ferdinandsen say they didn't tell him what it was for, but thanks to the magic of the internet and the British National Archives, for just a few British pounds, I was able to download the recommendation for that medal signed by American General Courtney Hodges. And I guess Mr. Ferdinandsen will be hearing this for the first time, as you do too. It was for what he did right around Christmas during the Battle of the Bulge, and I'll read it to you. In the vicinity of Verdun, Belgium, on 25 and 26 December 1944, Staff Sergeant Ferdinandsen, Platoon Sergeant, distinguished himself by his gallantry and leadership in action against the enemy. When his platoon was cut off from the rest of his company by enemy armored vehicles, Staff Sergeant Ferdinandsen skillfully placed his men into position from which they were able to hold off the Germans. Disregarding personal safety, he made his way through enemy lines to report the situation to his company commander and then return to his platoon. The following day, when a fierce German attack further endangered his men, he again went through hostile lines and led a support party through heavy fire to relieve the pressure upon his platoon. By his gallantry and leadership, Staff Sergeant Ferdinandsen thwarted a strong enemy attack and prevented the Germans from seizing a vital position. Sounds like a pretty big deal to me. And so now when you look at that picture on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, Monty pinning the medal on his chest, think about the courage that produced it. We're out of time this time, but join us again next time for a special Memorial Day edition of Hometown Heroes and the story of a son's quest for details on the death of the World War II pilot father he never got to meet. It's quite a story, and there may be some further developments to come. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.